Well, Anshul, it's been a while since you and I've done a 5G podcast, our standalone edition. And I'm excited. We've got Shahid Ahmed, leads NTT Private 5G. But Shahid, I love your title, New Ventures and Innovation. Before we get started, can you talk a little bit about that? Because that sounds like it's a lot more expansive than just Private 5G, right?
That is true. That is true. Thanks. And great to see both. Yeah, look, the world is shifting as well, even with AI in pretty much everything we do. Much like that in corporate setting, we have to have flexible titling. And that's one of the advantage of working in a large company is to be able to get one of those. But joking aside, I think this is mostly because I'm responsible for coming up with new ideas, new offerings that we can take to the market. As markets are shifting regularly, on a daily, hourly basis, and we got to keep up. And market fit is a very important part of our overall roadmap, and we got to continuously build new things, new offerings that manage and fit to our customers' requirements and needs.
I've gotten to know you over the years. I've gotten to know NTT as a company as well. I've spent time in R&D Forum in Tokyo. I've been to a few upgrades in San Francisco, and I'm really impressed with what the company is doing, not only from a data center perspective, but with private 5G. And I really, when I look at 2025, and this is a subject that Anshul and I have talked about on our podcast, and like we're about to celebrate our 5th year. And it's crazy to think that he and I have been doing this for 5 years now, but really, from my perspective, 2025 is really becoming the year of private cellular and private 5G. That hockey stick is finally taking off. And he and I have talked about, and I think you and I have talked about as well, Shahid, some of the challenges, different paths to get to 5G and that sort of thing. But I'd love it if you could spend a little bit of time and discuss from your perspective what's really driving the momentum behind private 5G in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, you're right. We're also seeing that little uptick. And you and I had spoken about our private 5G offering when we first launched, like almost 3.5, almost 4 years ago. And things were very raw and fresh and new to a lot of constituents, whether it's the suppliers or the customers or the other ecosystem players like device manufacturers. It was new. And we kept at it. And now we're beginning to see and reap the investments we made earlier on in private 5G. So, yeah, absolutely beginning to see that uptick. In fact, I think that's been going on for the last 6 months. And so, why is that? And we've looked into that quite deeply ourselves because we're sold out and we're like trying to figure out where to shift our resources so we can manage this uptick in demand. And we see three major forces that are driving this new demand, if you will. One, I think devices are finally beginning to make it to the overall ecosystem. In the beginning, we didn't see natively supported 5G devices for enterprises. And it was a major problem, to be frank with you. And that kind of impeded a lot of the progress. Many of our customers wanted private 5G. There simply weren't enough devices or the variety of devices we needed to support those use cases. And so it was like always a chicken and egg situation. And that really slowed down a lot of deployments. In fact, to the extent even customers that had the budgets, had the SOW signed with us, wanted to delay it just because they like, we don't want to start with the wrong foot forward. And let's wait till the devices make it to the market and then we'll get going. So I think that was one area that we thought has really matured and we're beginning to see a plethora of devices out there today. So that was a big tailwind behind our backs. The second one, I think, was just the availability of spectrum. I think that is something not just US, but outside of US, we were challenged with many regulators not really fully getting on board and allocating spectrum to enterprises directly. And in fact, even as recent as 6, 8 months ago, we had to work with Ofcom to see if they could figure out a way to allocate spectrum directly to an enterprise. And there was a lot of process, a lot of red tape. But I think by and large, we're beginning to see a lot of these regulators now get on board. I think that has been very helpful as well. Because without spectrum, you can't run a cellular network. And that is a fundamental requirement.
And CBRS has been an important part of democratizing access in the US. But I think to your point, it varies by geography, right? Europe is a whole different ball of wax, European Commission, and how individual countries manage spectrum as well. So you got to democratize that spectrum because that's how this all works, right? Wi-Fi is unlicensed spectrum. So, yeah.
And we should talk about what's happening with CBRS in the US. There's some political headwinds around that
Sure.
we recently coming across. But I think spectrum, that was again a big impediment, and I think that's by and large solved in most geographies. There's still a lot of geographies, especially in particular in Asia, in some of the countries, Southeast Asia, they still haven't really specifically allocated spectrum to the enterprises, but I think they're slowly moving forward with that strategy. The third one we're beginning to see is just the idea of economics behind private 5G.
You and I have talked about that quite a bit in the past, right?
And we always said that private 5G has to have Wi-Fi economics. And what I mean by that is, look, it cannot be telco-centric architecture that naturally drives a very hefty CapEx and OpEx bill of material for you, right? And so it has to come down to a point where it's not even an economic decision whether to pick Wi-Fi or private 5G. It's just so easy in terms of making a decision that, yes, we'll do 5G in the warehouse. We'll do 5G in the parking lot where thousands of cars are waiting to get shipped out to the rest of the world for an auto manufacturing companies. The economics, I think, became much more clearer in terms of what is the ROI. And it wasn't really the price points that we were worried about. Yes, indeed, it did drop over the last 3 years. In the way we sold it became much more articulate in terms of what are we selling as opposed to what is the bill of material and in terms of CapEx and OpEx. And what happened was a lot of these pilots start to show the clear ROI for private 5G systems. And I'll give you an example. There was an auto manufacturer that we worked with, and we did a pilot for almost a year and a half with them. And what happened was they said, look, we're going to try to do Wi-Fi at the same time just to see if the two things add up and compare with one another. The result was, net-net, was that the wiring and cabling needed to do all those Wi-Fi access points, and I'm talking about for north of a 1 million square feet of area, you need to put a lot of Wi-Fi access points. I don't care. You have Wi-Fi 7, 8, 9, 10, you pick any of those. It's a lot, okay? And one of the big cost items was just the blue Cat 7 cables going to these access points. Very expensive. Not only just getting the power there, but just the cabling there. And you can get away with power by putting PoE systems, but it is very expensive. Very expensive. Now, you compare that to a 5G system, same area, same outdoor coverage, putting in 5, 6, maybe 7 at most versus thousands of Wi-Fi access points. And so, not only from a cost perspective, you've got security ingress issues where you've got so many ingress points coming in versus 5 ingress points. So it became abundantly clear for many of our customers that, look, this makes sense. And we're talking use cases like we want to auto flash all cars all at the same time. I need bandwidth. I need coverage. I need reliability. You get all of those attributes come in and do a 5G network. It made so much sense for them to do this.
The economics are compelling because you get to a point, right, when you were also dealing with outdoor, indoor, massive spaces where the economics just make more sense, to your point, to have five or six radios and you've got your core infrastructure in place. And then the security, like I didn't really, you brought this point up and it's something that I didn't really think about, but securing that as well is a heck of a lot easier when you've got five or six radios versus thousands of APs. But I know Anshul's dying to ask you a question about edge, because there's a lot of focus on modern AI going hybrid and moving to network edges. And we've speculated that you need the 5G low latency and high throughput to make that all a reality. But Anshul, I'll let you fire away.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about edge AI, how compute is moving closer to the edge, but also how agentic AI paired with edge AI is driving 5G networks and private 5G applications and what you're seeing.
Yeah, Anshul, so we launched Edge AI just almost 8 months ago now. The whole idea, let's take a step back. What is Edge AI? And so we're all familiar with ChatGPT, you've got OpenAI, you've got Gemini, you've got all from France, you've got a bunch of very large language models out there today that are, not to get too technical, but that are huge in terms of parameters it supports and its neural network. So to give you some sense, ChatGPT 4.0 uses north of 100 billion parameters in its neural network. So that's all the tokens you need to parse through a decision tree, right? So essentially, that's what a neural network is, if then else. Most of the time, it's a probabilistic, heuristic model where it literally guesses what, based on probabilities, what the next word might be. You don't need that for a edge type use case in a manufacturing setting. So if you think about a robotic arm that uses a lot of kinematic decision trees, so it has to decide several different permutations of moving an arm between different parts of the conveyor belt. It doesn't require 100 billion parameters of, it requires, maybe 100,000 parameters and tokens to build a neural network to be able to support the use cases for that robotic arm. And more importantly, it has to be almost, latency has to be almost zero. Very ultra low latency is the major requirement, right? So you don't have the luxury of going to the cloud where the massive large language model is and be able to decide on a particular decision. It has to be very quick. It uses linear programming models that are mathematical based as opposed to language based. So it's solving for what maximizing a set of parameters and equations as opposed to figuring out what the next word might be. So it's fundamentally very different. And so that's the idea behind edge AI versus a, say, large language model. Now, in comes agentic AI. Agentic AI is mainly related to the workflows. And so what we're talking about, you may have a workflow around procurement, right, where you have to approve a set of POs or invoices, right? And so agentic could essentially learn all of those particular business processes. And based on some rules, it will approve that PO or invoice to get through. So it's a very IT-centric model as opposed to edge AI. Again, think of edge AI as something that might be useful for a drone. And I was in Japan recently, looked at our chipset that we just recently came out. That is AI chipset, but that's not a GPU. It's a regular old CPU. You can run some of our edge AI models actually in a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, you can
That's how
inference on
small
an
we're talking about.
yeah, you can inference on an x86. Intel's all about that, right? Yeah.
100%. You can inference a lot of these things in a small, as long as they're small mathematical based, as opposed to language based, because that requires massive processing.
Right.
And think of a drone, like a a autonomous drone going inside a building where Inferno burning, right? It's burning. It has to go from point A to point B and come back to point A. It has to know how to navigate through and learn on the fly, no pun intended, as it's going through, and being able to tackle smoke, fire, other debris, and be able to come back and report in real time what's happening inside. And so that requires an AI model that's got to fly the plane, right? That's learning and flying at the same time. That's the mindset or the overall architecture we're talking about when we talk about edge AI. And I think to me, that is still a market and a technology yet to be completely understood. I think there's some progress being made. We're making some good progress with doing lighting these up for some of our same P5G customers because we're there. And but I think the likes of the big guys like OpenAI, Microsoft, I think once they get into this, will blow up, much like agentic AI has over the last few months.
It's just going to take time, and proof of concepts have to get out into the wild, and you've got to drive awareness for that. And I know, Shai, that NTT is focused on this concept of factory of the future, where you're taking what you're doing with Edge AI, you're utilizing private 5G, right? And you're working with some of the largest companies on the planet. I've spent time with you and the team at a Schneider facility, Schneider Electric facility in Barcelona a few years ago at
Yeah,
Mobile
that's
World
right.
Congress. LyondellBasell, which is, I believe they manufacture trains, right? Can you speak to maybe Schneider and what you're doing there to enable this whole notion of factory of the future?
No, what is the factory of the future? And we've been hearing that quite a bit lately, especially here in the US, where the administration is trying to get all the manufacturing back in the US. And yet we don't have the labor workforce to work on it. And so if you think about that, the what is that factory will look like? I think these are mostly dark factories where you'll have most of the work done will be done through robots. And automation is going to be critical. And I'm actually, if you wanted to take a peek of what that world will look like, you just have to go to China. And there's a lot of movement and progress being made in terms of what that factory of the future looks like. A lot of dark factories, a lot of robotic arms, a lot of automation. It's amazing. If you have an opportunity, well, check it out. Actually, you can even go to Taiwan or Philippines. They also have been doing that if China is not an easy place to get to these days. So that's, if you think about what that world looks like, connectivity becomes a paramount capability. And I don't mean this like just a private 5G network, but it's the whole fabric there, from the wired infrastructure to the wireless infrastructure. It is so important that without it, nothing happens. You could potentially have the whole factory shut down just because of a routing table that wasn't properly configured. And that's something, you know, we are very focused on. We think as manufacturing moves to the US or other parts of the world where they double down on manufacturing capabilities, where labor workforce becoming, they're aging out, and reskilling them becomes a very challenging proposition. And so retooling is where we think industrial companies, manufacturing companies will look at.
I think Anshul's got a final question for you around just access to all this technology, right? Because it's a high bar. And to your point, a lot of what's driving private cellular and private 5G is moving manufacturing offshore back into the US, right? There are huge investments in semiconductor production now. Intel's opening a big fab, they're launching a foundry business, right? TSMC is investing in the United States as well and in places like Arizona and others, but it comes down to democratization.
Yeah, this is a twofer. I wanted to see if you could maybe tell us a little bit about the convergence of a lot of these wireless technologies and how that's driving future applications, but also real-time computing that takes advantage of the convergence of these for secure communications?
Yeah, it's a great question, Anshul. Actually, one of the most interesting things we're seeing is where 5G and Wi-Fi coexist on the same radio. That, and I don't mean just two different radios, but they're actually integrated together. To me, that convergence of 5G, private 5G cellular and Wi-Fi, think about that. In a warehouse setting or factory setting or even a hospital setting, you can roam, if you will, or ping pong between the two networks, depending on how you have configured it. I think to me that's going to be very powerful, and I'm really looking forward to that convergence. And we're beginning to see some of the OEMs now really start to launch those kinds of capabilities and products. Stay tuned for that. And more broadly speaking, I think from a security standpoint, we are working with many of our customers. 5G for us, private 5G for us, is a tip of the spear. As we go to our large, very large customers, it opens up all kinds of other opportunities for us. And so when we walk in there, typically we go with private 5G, we end up with transforming their whole network architecture. And a lot of it has to do with security. But because as you start to increase your automation, there's a lot more security challenges associated with that, right? You open up OT devices that have never been opened up or haven't been opened up in decades. Now you're opening that up too. And so, yeah, I think where security is going to be a big part of this. A lot of our network architecture work that we do starts with that. And it's just, I don't think anybody has the magic wand to just fix that in one shot. I think this is an ongoing challenge that's always going to be around.
Yeah, should I upgrade this year? I learned that NTT is the third largest provider of data center services. So your point around P5G being the tip of the spear, and I have to educate a lot of people that NTT is not just an integrator as well. You've got this bevy of solutions. You're very deep, you're very broad. You're working with companies like Cisco and others. And it's been really interesting to see the evolution of the company. And there's been some consolidation as well. I think there was the recent news around the operating company and some consolidation there, which I think has driven a little bit of, I don't want to say confusion, but misunderstanding of what NTT does on a global basis as well. As we wrap things up, do you want to comment on that point?
Absolutely. Let me first comment on Cisco. We're a long-standing partners there, one of the largest partners we have. In fact, one of the most important things we did recently with them was embedded our eSIM, Transitel eSIM, into their Meraki Catalyst boxes. So that if you're familiar with Transitel, it's the one of the largest MVNOs in the world. We have connectivity in 200 different countries. So think about it. We put that eSIM in every Catalyst, every Meraki box, enabling the enterprises to be able to provision, configure very quickly. You open up the Meraki router, right? And you go to meraki.com. Immediately, you're connected without figuring out, hey, I need to have connectivity. So you can download the configuration and be done in like less than 5 minutes.
Powerful.
Very powerful. And I think you think about a deployment where you have thousands of Meraki or Catalyst devices, very easy to provision. Once you're done with that, and we're giving away that for first 60 days, be able to connect right away as a bootstrap. And then after that, the customer can sign up for longer term as a backup solution. Yeah, we do a lot of things. And we've got a lot of stuff. And so, yeah, I think bringing the two, all of our companies together as one, I think that made so much sense.
Yeah,
And I think
fantastic.
hopefully we simplify for our customers all of our offerings all in one.
Yeah. Shahid, you're a busy guy. Thank you for taking the time to speak with Anshul and I about what NTT is doing, the innovation that you're driving, not only with private 5G, but even beyond that, the data center and that sort of thing. And it's been a while since we've done a standalone edition of our podcast. So thanks again for being on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, more thank you, and thanks for having me today. Appreciate
Thanks
that.
a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.